Good evening, everyone. So good to be here. See, we're still letting some people in. It's really nice to see everyone here for the concert tonight. My name is Yaniv Attar. I am the first candidate for your journey in finding a new music director, so I'm really glad to be here, especially at these challenging times, to say the least. So I thought today, before we talk about the program, maybe I'll tell you a little bit about myself and my background, where I come from and all that, and then we'll talk a little bit about the program you're about to hear tonight. I'm going to take this off. I tested negative, just so you know. Good for you. So I was born in Israel. I moved out of Israel when I was 18. I went to study at the Royal College of Music in London. I was there for 4 years, and then I went to New York City. I studied at the Juilliard School of Music. And after that, I went to McGill University, where I did another master's in conducting. My instrument is classical guitar, but I always kind of try to combine both of these loves into my professional life. So I did a master's at McGill, and then I stayed there for the doctorate in Montreal. And then the first job I got was an assistant conductor. I moved to Birmingham, Alabama. I was the assistant conductor and then resident of the Alabama Symphony Orchestra. And during that time, I was very lucky to be able to conduct many, many concerts. It was over 100 concerts in 2 years. And I took the orchestra on tours and did a lot of education concerts, family concert outreach, and masterwork. So that was quite a journey. And then the first music director job I received was in Bellingham, Washington. So on the other side of the country, just between Seattle and Vancouver. So I have an orchestra there. I also have a chamber orchestra in Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania Chamber Orchestra. And I'm also artistic partner with the Northwest Sinfonietta in the Seattle-Tacoma area. It's a chamber orchestra as well, but they decided that they don't want to deal with music directors. We're too hard to deal with. So they have artistic partners. Basically, they have two conductors or three conductors over a number of seasons, and then they rotate and conduct some of the concerts. So this is in the nutshell, and this is what brought me here to Rockford. I'm so glad to be here and work with your wonderful Rockford Symphony Orchestra. So a little bit about the program today. The first half is really Hispanic, I would say, celebration. We're going to play two works. One is by the Mexican composer Arturo Marquez, who is still a living composer. And right after, we will play the Concerto de Aranjuez for classical guitar and orchestra by Spanish composer Joaquin Rodrigo. And it's so amazing. I mean, these composers could not be more different than each other. But each of these works is the work that made this composer really world famous. Danzo number 2, not so long ago, and I'll tell you a little bit later about how this piece became famous. But now when you associate any piece by Marquez, it's this piece. Joaquin Rodrigo is the same. And he wrote this piece in 1939. And what's interesting about both these pieces is that they capture the essence of the music of their country so well that each of these works is referred to as the unofficial anthem of that country. So the Danzo number 2 is referred to as the unofficial national anthem of Mexico, and Rodrigo de Aranjuez is described and got the nickname of the unofficial national anthem of Spain. So it's quite an amazing thing in itself. So let's start with Marquez. He's still alive. He's a very serious composer. And he writes serious music, contemporary music, a lot of avant-garde experimental music. But the pieces that really made him famous was these set of 8 danzons for orchestra. And it's amazing to think about it because these pieces were not very known outside of Mexico. The way they became famous was when Gustavo Dudamel, the music director of the Los Angeles Philharmonic now, he used to be the music director of a very famous youth orchestra now, Simon Bolivar Youth Orchestra in Venezuela. And he took the orchestra on tour. I think it was in the London Proms where they performed this piece and it was televised. And in an instant, this piece became so popular and famous, literally every orchestra all over the world, transcription for bands, you name it, everybody wanted to play it. So for composers who wrote so much serious music to become famous worldwide for something that wasn't his specialty or I don't want to say passion because he did love it, it's quite remarkable. But he himself said that the Danzón number 2 especially, but all the 8, was really his way to pay respect and show his passion for popular music. And it's quite, I think, clear why he had it. I mean, this is the kind of music he heard since he was probably a little baby. His father was a famous mariachi musician. His grandfather and other members of his family were very known folk musicians in Mexico. So he was very much familiar with the style, with the melodies, with the different dances, and it clearly comes in his music. A little bit about the danzón you're about to hear. I mean, originally it's a Cuban dance, but it's also dance in Mexico, and there are really two elements that come in the danzón that Marquez develops through the course of the piece. One of them is, I would say, slow, but still within this slow feel of the music, you still hear a little bit of a dance kind of rhythmic thing underneath. Sometimes the strings are used as pitch percussion for this with fun pizzicatos. That's when they pluck the instrument, they don't play with the bow. And some other percussion. There's a very exciting percussion section of this piece. But what's really is the character of the danzón for those slow parts are the melodies, which are trying to evoke something very nostalgic. And you hear it at the beginning, it's represented by the clarinet, and from then on, it goes to the orchestra. Let's listen a little bit to what the beginning of that danzón sound like, if I can work my iPad. Little tango. So you hear the tum, 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 really tango-ish kind of rhythm. So that's, I mean, you can hear how nostalgic that melody sounds. And of course, the second element that, again, it goes back and forth between those two elements in the piece, is the very wild dance. It's just explosion of rhythm, of energy. Let's hear a little bit of that, if I can find it. Somewhere in the middle. Let's see. It's real fun to play. It's really fun to conduct. And I can tell you, my wife will back me up on this. I'm a terrible dancer, but even this music really wants me to jump out of my seat and dance. It's really fun. So from one unofficial national anthem, we go to the next one, and that's the Concerto de Aranjuez by the Spanish composer Joaquin Rodrigo. This is a piece I, as a classical guitarist and as a guitar student when I was really little, really, I fell in love with the piece from a very young age. And I think for me, it was the first piece that really showed me the incredible power that music has. I still remember myself as a 10-year-old sitting in my home with my Walkman and, you know, tape cassette, listening to this piece with tears in my eyes. It's that emotional. It is the most important guitar concerto in the repertoire, and we really, as classical guitarists, we owe it to Rodrigo, because this concerto was the concerto that brought the classical guitar to the stage as a serious concert instrument, not just as a folk instrument. It's an incredible work, and one of the things that is so amazing about guitar is that unless you play the guitar, it's a very difficult instrument to write to. And this is why I think many composers don't write to it. It's similar to, I would say, the harp. If you ask any harpist, they will tell you that most composers today do not know how to write for harp. And every time they get a piece that they have to play with orchestra, with a harp part, they always have to adapt it and change it and make it work for the instrument. And it's the same for guitar. So this is what is so amazing about Rodrigo. He did not play the guitar, but he wrote an incredible amount of work for solo guitar, many guitar concertos, and it's so idiomatic, it's amazing. I can think of only one other composer that was able to do that, and that's Mario Castelnuovo Tedesco, Italian composer that fled Europe during the war and settled in Hollywood. He was a composition teacher of the famous John Williams. Anyway, just a fun story. So Rodrigo was a virtuoso pianist, and what's even more amazing about him, that he was blind from the age of 3. And, I mean, he did all his studies as a, you know, music prodigy. He wrote all his pieces in Braille, and they were later transcribed. And this concerto, again, it was the concerto that made him famous. It's a typical three-movement concerto. The outer movements, the first and the last movement, are, I would say, typical Spanish dances, very rhythmic, very fun, but with a lot of nobility, which is a trademark, I think, of his works in general. But the heart of the piece is really the second movement. And that movement gave that this concerto, that title of the unofficial anthem of Spain. It's a very famous, I would say one of the most beautiful music melodies ever written for the English horn. The theme is presented by the English horn while the guitar is actually accompanying that beautiful solo, and then it moves to the guitar, and later on it comes back at the end in a very climatic moment of the piece. Let's listen a little bit to what that sounds like. Just gorgeous. I'm going to move to the end of the piece. This is where, towards the end of the movement, the guitarist has a pretty long cadenza, which basically it's the part of the concerto where the soloists get to show off their virtuosity without the orchestra. So they just solo. I think it's pretty much there. Let me see. Pretty much the end. Beautiful. For many, this piece was written in 1939, so right at the end of the Spanish Civil War. And for many, many years, and Rodrigo didn't actually set the record straight about this, it was believed to be inspired by the famous mural of Pablo Picasso, Guernica, which was a response to the bombing of Guernica. And only shortly after Rodrigo's death, his widow actually told what was the real inspiration behind writing this movement. And it was a personal tragedy. It was the miscarriage of their firstborn child. So, you know, when you hear this piece of music, it's so heart-wrenching, and when you know where it's coming from, it's even more incredible. We have fantastic guitarist Daniel Bolshoi, who is going to join us for this performance. I know you're going to love him in this really, really fun concerto by Rodrigo. So enough with national anthems. Let's move to the second half. And this time we're going to perform the very famous symphony number 4 by Tchaikovsky. Now, Tchaikovsky, when we hear the name Tchaikovsky, the first thing everybody thinks about is always ballet music and, of course, the famous Nutcracker. But Tchaikovsky also wrote symphonies. Not many. He wrote 6 symphonies. And he really struggled in his life, I mean, with many things, but also as a symphonic writer. And this is a very personal thing for me. I really think that the 6 symphonies is really cut in the middle, where the first 3, I tend to call them a little bit unsuccessful, maybe, attempts to write symphonies, and the 4th symphony is really, to me, where Tchaikovsky really had a breakthrough as a composer in terms of writing symphonies. The 6th one is, of course, the most incredible one. If you don't know it, Tchaikovsky actually committed suicide after a few days after the premiere of that symphony. He struggled a lot about being gay, and that symphony is really, number 6, is virtually a suicide note. It's the most incredible testament that I think we have in classical music. They say that every composer after Beethoven, which is, you know, the symphonist, every composer writing symphonies after Beethoven wrote symphonies in his shadow. And Tchaikovsky is a perfect example of it. He himself talks about the 4th symphony as modeled on the 5th symphony of Beethoven. Obviously, you all know that's just as a reminder, this is how Beethoven fifths begin. I think we all know this, right? the most famous four notes in the history of music, and it's been referred to as fate knocking on the door. And that's the nickname of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. Similarly, the Fourth Symphony of Tchaikovsky also is nicknamed Fate, Fatum. And Tchaikovsky himself talks in his letters about how Beethoven's Fifth was a model for him for writing this symphony. So you heard this fanfare, pom 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 pom. How does Tchaikovsky Fourth begins? So again, a repeated note motif, kind of a knock on the door. That's what gives him the nickname. And Tchaikovsky really uses it in many ways the same way Beethoven uses this theme in his symphony. Actually, in Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, he even takes this kind of compositional technique even further, and there are thematic connections throughout the symphony. But here you would hear this bum, da 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 dum, pum pum in the beginning of the development, and then before the coda at the end. And that theme even comes at the very end of the symphony, in the fourth movement. So all the way after you listen to 40 minutes of music, all of a sudden you hear that fanfare at the end. And I think the most amazing thing about Tchaikovsky that he took from Beethoven is that you can really feel, like in the Fifth Symphony, it starts in C minor, ends in C major. It starts very serious, tragic, any way you want to call it. And the Fifth Symphony of Beethoven ends in major in a glorious way. Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony is exactly in the same kind of Beethovenian manner. It starts with this fanfare in the horns, very tragic, very dramatic, and then at the end, he ends in F major in the most triumphant way you can end a symphony. Let's listen to the end of the symphony. I feel like it's kind of a spoiler, I'm giving you the ending. Which is your cue to jump off your seat and yell bravo, right? So, really amazing work, and it's always surprising to me when I read about this symphony, and to read that at his time, when it was premiered, it wasn't well received. And today, I mean, we can't think of our repertoire without Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony, and without any of those last symphonies, but Tchaikovsky's Fourth is a real symbol in terms of orchestration, melodies, unbelievable complex rhythms, and just incredible work. This is the really fun program, and I'm so happy that we can open 2022 gathering together to experience live music together. Thank you so much, all of you, for being here and for supporting your wonderful Rockford Symphony Orchestra, and I hope you enjoy the concert. Thank you.